Everyone around Jennifer San Marco knew that she had mental issues. In 2000, she had to be wheeled out of her post office job by police after she was found hiding under a mail sorting machine. In 2004, her car broke down in Grants, New Mexico, where she decided to actually stay and get a home there. There, she earned a reputation for her strange behavior, which included shouting to herself, ordering food at restaurants, then running out the door before eating it, stripping naked in public, kneeling and praying in random places, talking to an imaginary friend, screaming death threats, and making racist comments. However, on January 30th, 2006, Jennifer decided that she was done with life, but she didn't want to go alone. Welcome to History's Biggest Villains. Jennifer San Marco was born in Brooklyn, New York on December 6, 1961. As a child, Jennifer would play with the other local children. They played things like stickball and would hang out after school together to chat and joke around. Although Jennifer was shy, she would involve herself with other children and was a part of a group of friends. Jennifer rarely spoke to her friends about her home life, and not too much is known about how she was with her family and what her childhood actually was like. She attended Edward R. Murrow High School and graduated from there in 1978. Then went on to attend Brooklyn College and finally Rutgers University. In 1989, Jennifer moved to the West Coast, where she got a job as a prison guard and was also a police dispatcher for Santa Barbara. She also had a temporary teacher's assistant job at one point. However, she didn't keep any of these positions for long and left them after a few months. During her time in Santa Barbara, Jennifer rented a few properties and moved a couple of times in between jobs. But in 1997, Jennifer got steady work at the Goleta Mail Distribution and Processing Plant. A little later down the line, she bought a condo in Goleta not far from her workplace. She lived in an apartment building where she met Beverly Graham, but her actual relationship with Beverly is mostly unknown. They were neighbors who shared a connecting wall, but had been seen by other neighbors having dramatic arguments about the noise Jennifer would make. Beverly had reported Jennifer to the authorities about her loud music, something Jennifer wasn't happy about. Jennifer's other neighbors also made comments on her odd behavior while she lived in the apartment in Goleta, saying she would behave strangely and talk to herself, or walk up the street yelling out Beatles songs loudly. These types of things would occur more often even at work. While living in California, Jennifer would keep her job at the postal facility in Goleta for a total of 6 years. In general, she was known as a good, hardworking employee who kept to herself. Colleagues noted that she wasn't rude and would often smile and greet people as she passed them. She wasn't overly chatty, but would involve herself from time to time in discussions with people she worked with. However, in the last 2 years at her time at the facility, her coworkers noticed changes in her appearance and behaviors. They noticed she would look unkempt, and her makeup was applied seemingly with little concern about how it looked. She became more withdrawn than usual and stopped talking to people. She became irritable at little things and was reported at times to be seen talking to herself. In 2001, near the end of her time at the postal facility, Jennifer made a disturbing comment to a coworker, Dexter Shannon, about a woman who committed suicide that they both knew. He was unnerved by the comment and reported her as a cause for concern. As a result of this, on February 5th, Jennifer was called into the office so she could be asked about what she said and why she said it. Jennifer then refused to go into the office and started to make a scene. She got very angry and started yelling aggressively at people. The police were called to calm the situation down. Jennifer was still refusing to be spoken to about her comments. Once the police arrived, it took 2 officers to contain her. The officers arrested her for her aggressive behavior towards her manager and colleagues. Due to the nature of her outbursts and the other concerns about her behavior, the mental health team were called to do a risk assessment. Upon seeing her, they decided it was not safe for her to be released, and they needed a proper evaluation to make a diagnosis and implement the right treatment for Jennifer. She was committed for 72 hours by a member of the mental health team under the California Code 5150. This allows a person with a mental illness to be involuntarily detained for a 72-hour period. Although Jennifer was given a diagnosis and a treatment plan, she refused it, but was still released once her hold was up. Jennifer returned to work after this incident, and her coworker said she became very distant and withdrawn after this and wouldn't talk to anyone. She was agitated and irritable all the time. One employee even said she shouted at him for saying hello, and after that, he never talked to her again. During early 2003, her supervisors were getting reports of her aggressively talking to herself and yelling at no one. They made a decision to retire her from the job based on psychological grounds. She was medically discharged and asked to leave. Shortly after her medical retirement, she put her home up for sale with plans to leave Santa Barbara. telling a few friends she had that she was going to go move east with her sister, even though she was an only child. The property sold in July 2003, and Jennifer packed up to leave. She planned to head back to her family driving east on Route 66. During the drive, her car broke down near a town in Milan in New Mexico. She ends up staying in Grants, New Mexico, not far from there. Jennifer lived in a property just behind a gas station in a standard two-story home with a nice garden. She was known by the locals during her time in Milan initially as a nice, pleasant woman who didn't cause trouble or act out. But over time, this changed somewhat as once again, strange behaviors were noticed along with her appearance changing. There were reports of her going into stores, buying items such as bottles of alcohol and food. She would then leave the store and throw the items in the trash along with the receipt or any other money she had in her hand at the time. She was seen doing this by multiple people on different occasions. On one occasion, she stripped naked in front of customers at Ortega's gas station. The gas station owner said she would come in often. They had a friendly relationship. However, sometimes she would do or say strange things. Examples he gave were of Jennifer randomly praying on her knees and describing her talking to herself. At times, she would look to the left and have conversations with herself about things like there was someone next to her. The local Milan village administrator's office was another place Jennifer would frequent regularly. She seemed to become attached to a staff member there named Sonia Salazar. Building up a friendly rapport over time, she would come in regularly to see Sonia. But it got to the point where Jennifer would ask to be served by only Sonia. If she wasn't there, Jennifer would get very agitated about it. Around this time, Sonia described that Jennifer was nice to her, but had started to become irritable and short-tempered with her too. Sonia also noticed a change in Jennifer's overall appearance, saying she came in with a short, messy haircut, like she had just hacked chunks of her hair off and she wouldn't dress as nicely anymore. Sonia describes, on one day, Jennifer came into the village administrator's office with some documents and was arguing with someone that wasn't there. Jennifer stated that she wanted to apply for a business license to register a business called the Racist Press, and that she had documents she had written that she wanted to publish. These publications consisted of 5 volumes titled The Racist Press. These contained mostly ideas of a conspiracy theory. She thought the government could control people via the media. They would do this to send messages to people to commit murders on their behalf. Obviously, the business license was denied. A little while after she was denied her business license, she purchased a semi-automatic handgun in August 2005 from pawn shop Ace Pawn and Antiques in New Mexico. She waited the 15-day waiting period and then picked it up. Jennifer bought a 9mm Smith & Wesson 9.15 with a 15-round magazine. She then went to another pawn shop in Gallup, New Mexico and bought 200 rounds of 9mm ammunition. There's no background check with this. Somebody just walks in and buys 200 rounds of ammunition and you don't say anything? Strange. After this, she spent time practicing her shooting. There was evidence that she used her back garden for this as many spent rounds were found as long as objects used as targets. The investigators that searched her property said the evidence showed she was a good shot. Jennifer was getting ready to confront those who had made her life take a turn for the worse. The people that she blamed as being responsible for the things she had failed at. In the end of January 2006, Jennifer got in her truck with her gun, her keys, and some cash, and she headed back to California from Milan in one straight trip. She drove via Arizona, taking the 110W. She stopped off in Los Angeles at some point during the morning the day of the shooting. A receipt was found by investigators in her truck showing the time and location of her stop. This was a 12-hour car trip, roughly 818 miles. Her first stop would be her old apartment to see her old neighbor Beverly Graham. It's not clear what happened when Jennifer arrived inside the apartment, but it's known that she entered the property by climbing over the wall at the back. There were signs of a struggle in Beverly's apartment as things were broken and messy. Jennifer shot Beverly and left the property, got back in her truck, and headed towards her old postal workplace. Beverly's body was discovered in her home by her boyfriend. When Jennifer arrived, she was faced with the issue of security checks that required an ID pass. She had a plan to get in the building, though. As she headed towards the barrier to gain entry into the car park, she tailgated the vehicle in front of her so that the barrier would remain up, thinking it was a long vehicle. The plan worked, and she was in the car park. She parked about 100 feet from the employee entrance and got out of her truck. To get through the employee door, she would need an ID pass. Jennifer saw a young male employee with a key pass around his neck. She held him up at gunpoint and told him she wouldn't shoot him if he gave her his pass. In fear, he obliged and gave it to her, and she then told him to get away from the building, so he ran. Jennifer turned towards the entrance and headed for it. She saw Zay Fairchild making her way towards the door for work, and Jennifer started to walk towards her. Once she was close enough, she looked directly at Zay Fairchild and shot her in the head at point-blank range. Jennifer then turned around and headed back towards the employee door. Jennifer, close to the door, noticed Malika Higgins not far from her. Jennifer raised the gun and shot Malika in the head at point-blank range. Malika instantly slumped down to the floor. Not fazed at all by this, Jennifer turned back and got close to the door. Nicola Grant was about to go in, but Jennifer turned around and shot her too. Some employees eating in the break room had heard a commotion outside and stood up to look through to see what was going on. They saw Jennifer walk past, looking over to them and smiling as she left Nicola for dead just outside the entrance. Jennifer went into the building, making her way to her old work desk. She saw her manager Charlotte Colton and aimed a gun as she got closer, firing and hitting her multiple times. Charlotte would die in the hospital 2 days later. Jennifer then turned to the aisle leading to her old desk. She spotted Guadalupe Schwartz and shot her 4 times. She looked up at her old desk where Dexter Shannon was working. He hadn't seen or heard any of the commotion because he had headphones on. Jennifer shot him in the head at point-blank range. At this point, Jennifer is standing with the gun, having killed 7 people in 1 day. But ultimately, she decided to turn the gun on herself. She was 44 years old. There are several theories that have come up to try to explain the reason for Jennifer's actions. San Marco was apparently convinced she was the target of a nefarious conspiracy centered at the Goleta Postal Facility, according to writings recovered from her home in New Mexico. A spokesman for the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office said that San Marco's paranoia and history of mental illness may have motivated her to commit the murders. Racism may have been a possible influence in the shooting as well, as 6 of the victims were minorities, 3 black, 1 Chinese, 1 Hispanic, and 1 Filipino. She may have murdered Graham for personal reasons, as the two had previously had an argument. According to Graham's boyfriend, San Marco would often go outside and start singing loudly. Graham also complained to her brother that San Marco would come out and rant and rave in front of her building. Among San Marco's writings were error-laden explanations of various religions and a confusing theory linking the U.S. government to serial killer David Berkowitz, or the Son of Sam, the Ku Klux Klan, and racist murders. A diary was found with over 100 pages of meticulously tracked perceived slights and offenses she had received from people. An auto body worker once said that San Marco claimed that the postal office mistreated her and that she never said anything violent or talked about murder, but that they had to pay, which may have indicated revenge as a possible motive. Regardless of why some think she did it, the truth is, she is a cold-blooded murderer. Like, I just looked into the story and she just snapped. Like, it's really no explanation. That's the thing that really unsettles a lot of people about these incidents, because there's no explanation and people are left guessing and wondering. Especially when the shooter commits suicide, then you can't talk to them and understand what they were thinking. So that's really the wild part about this story. But thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy listening to this story. Leave a like if you enjoyed. Hit that subscribe button if you're new to my channel. I really appreciate all the support you guys give me. But without further ado, please be safe. Stay on the grind. Have a great day. I'm out. Peace.